Well, hello. Welcome to the next podcast from the Teller. And it's summertime. It's August, in fact. It's time when everybody goes away on holiday. So if you're listening to this when you're back from your holiday, I hope it was a good one. If you're listening to this before you go away on holiday, I hope you have a good one. And if you're not going away on holiday this year, well, never mind. Let's hope you get somewhere nice next year. My story today is called The Three Ravens. Interesting little tale, this one, actually. I'm not quite sure where it comes from, but it's a very long time since I've done it. And using my notes of old to be able to do this one. I have a feeling it was done many years ago on TV on a programme called The Storyteller. But I'm not sure if it was one of the series or not now. Anyway, here we are. There was once a kingdom. And it was a happy place. Everybody was very happy. Flowers grew. Songs were sung. People danced around maypoles. You know. And in this kingdom, a good king reigned. He was loved. He was cherished. And what he gave, he got back tenfold. Because in his kingdom, there were rich harvests, golden days, and children. His queen was a woman of wit, majesty, and grace. Her smile was passed from mouth to mouth in the country like a gift. And a gift it was. Her smile blessed the land, and what it touched grew, and what it touched was healed. And so it went on, and on, for what seemed like forever. But then one bleak day in November, the queen died, and outside the palace the leaves themselves fell lamenting with reds and golds falling. Inside, however, at the end of the great hall in the long shadows, the king and his three sons and his daughter stood weeping, weeping, where the queen lay. And the people, they filed slowly by hour after hour and shed their tears for the poor dear queen. However, there was one amongst those mourners whose eyes were dry and whose brain raced ahead to the day when the king would want to ease his sadness. And this was a witch, because, oh yes, witch she was. And she swept her cold gaze across the solemn faces, across the sorrow and the sadness, and lingered icily on the princess and her three brothers, and then fixed her dry eyes on the king. And she schemed. And she schemed. A simple, very terrible scheme. She groaned for power. She wanted majesty over all things. She wanted that cold ring of gold around her head. And she'd wanted this, you know, until the want ate away her heart and her soul. And so she set to work on the king, and as the days passed, she inched little by little into his life. At first, the king didn't even see the witch. He didn't feel the sun on his face. He didn't feel the rain. He just felt the tug of the past, all day, all night, memory, memory, tugging at his sleeve, because his poor heart, you see, was broken. But the witch, now she could charm the skin from a snake and the leaves from a tree. And she turned all her power on the king, and she wound him in inch by inch, the past tugging him one way, and she very patiently pulling him the other. And one day she crept upon him. She was hunched and broken over his wife's tomb, with flowers in hand, and flowers on the grave. And as he shivered, he felt a cloak surrounding him, and pulling it to his breast, he turned and he saw a witch standing before him, standing with all concern and all kindness. Why, how strange, he felt. How shaken. because for an instant when he looked at her, he thought for a moment that he saw his wife's dear face. And indeed he did, because the witch had enchanted him. Her own hardness was blurred into the soothing features of his long-lamented queen. It was a spell. It was a spell that worked. "Why, you're back. You're back," he kept saying. And the witch replied, "Our little secret." And so it began, with the king wanting to feast forever on the witch, and the witch just reeling him in. Why, what syrup she was, what honey. And one day they walked together, and one day he held her hand, and then one day he kissed her. How happy he imagined he was. He called together his children, but their eyes were still red from weeping. The witch was with him. He introduced her. His eyes could not leave her as he spoke. "Children, I have something wonderful to tell you. I am going to be married and we're going to be happy again." Now the witch smiled at them with a smile like ice. "I hope you'll think of me as your friend," she smiled, "and then in time as your mother." And with this, her face melted into that of their mother's. Only the children could not see it. "Our mother's dead," they said, huddling together.
"A new mother," said the king quickly. "I think we mean as a new mother."
"That's right," said the witch, her true face returning. "In time." And then she went, sweeping out, and behind her in the room the four children stood. They felt threatened, they felt bewildered, and their father hugged unto them, hugged and begged them to try, begged them to understand. And as they hugged, they nodded sadly, promising to try. Oh yes, all hugs and all family. But that witch watched them from outside, and she cursed the children. She saw them as her rivals and her enemies, because she would not share. She wanted it all. So she set out to get it. She married the king, and she darkened the smile of the land to a scowl, and the shadows were set, and nothing would grow. And the witch sowed a seed of fear in the children's lives. Stairs would give way, horses bucked wild, balconies crumbled, and the world became dangerous. One day a toy box would be full of snakes, hissing and writhing. On another day the princess put a necklace around her neck that had been her mother's. She felt it tighten and tighten around her neck. And there were other things. Why, terror whispered its threat through the palace. Of course, the witch herself was all honey. Always honey. But sometimes the king would catch that chill look and worried that she was also the bee. And she could sting. But whenever he did, the sharp features softened and beguiled him. But now each time it would take longer. Poor man, torn in half he was, enchanted by his new queen, yet frightened for his children. Now what? What could he do? The king had a magic ball of twine. This twine knew its way through the forest. You could roll it into the trees. Did I say twees there? That's disgraceful. I'll try that again. Let's roll it into the trees, and it would pick a path. Pick this way, pick that, to where there lay a secret cottage. It lay pink, and it lay perfect.
Here there were streams, and there was a sanctuary, and the king lay awake, and one dark night, beside the witch, he watched her thin, cold sleep, and he decided. And next morning he slipped from the bed, he roused the children and took them quickly to the edge of the forest. And from his cloak he fetched the magic twine and set it rolling. For an hour they followed its marvellous journey, saying nothing, as they went past glade and glen and this way and that, until they came to a clearing and saw before them the cottage. And sorrow slipped from their shoulders, for their mother's smile lived here still, and it warmed them. "Yeah, it's perfect," they agreed, and they embraced each other and clapped backs, delighted. The boys, they larked and larruped as if a great weight had lifted off them. And the princess, their sister, sat by the stream. She dipped her toes and she missed her mother, which she always did, when she felt happy. "Now this is our secret place," said the king gently, sitting down beside her, taking her hand in this. "It's secret from the world. Nobody can find you here." The princess gazed at the stream, and not looking at her father, she said, "You've brought us here because of her, haven't you? Our stepmother." And although the king protested, and though he wouldn't admit it, she was right. And he had. Now even as they spoke, the witch, their stepmother, sat with her grey tower, and she studied horrible spells. The children were obstacles between her and her power. They were growing daily, growing like clouds over her. Now she would catch those clouds and puff them clean away. All night she brewed, and all night she recited, and all night she cursed her dark curses. And when the next day the king returned to the palace and looked for her, he found her spinning at a wheel, sending black threads of silk to and fro. But her scowl was stretched into a smile as sharp as that bee's sting. "Now where have you been?" she inquired, all of honey. "And you know the king?" "The king. Well, he explained that he'd taken the children on a holiday." She nodded. "Oh, yes," she understood. Did he like her sewing, she wondered. Why, she was sewing shirts, she said. She was sewing them all. Little shirts. The king felt terrible. Why, he'd misjudged his new queen. There she was at home, sewing presents for his children. And he was hiding them away from her. The witch pinched him. "Why, you're being very mysterious." She teased. "Where are the children? Where are our children? Why, you want me to be the mother, but what mother can tolerate not knowing where her children have got to?" Suddenly the king felt uneasy again. "I wanted them to have a holiday," he said. "It makes it special, if it's a secret holiday." The witch laughed. More of a cackle, really.
"Secret," she cackled.
Yes, of course. But what if something should happen to you? Then what would we do? What would happen to them? She bit into the thread and snapped it.
"Still, let that be an end to it. You don't want to tell me. It's your right. They're your children. I am only the stepmother."
And saying this, she spun the wheel and left him there to watch it turn and turn. Whatever her words, the witch had no intention of letting that be the end to it. And the next day, when the king rode off to visit the children, she followed, as stealthy as a bat, and watched him turn out the magic thread, watched its magic twists and turns, and smiled her bee-sting smile. Now that night, while the king slept, she searched for the twine. Sly. Silent. Rummaged and rooted and willed it to appear. and she found the twine, she stole it, and set it in its place, and left a ball of common thread instead, and then off at first light she went to find the poor children, her enemies, carrying with her magic thread, and magic shirts, and magic curses. Morning found the three princes knee-deep in a stream, tickling for trout. Every now and then a cry would break the silence, and a shout and a laugh, as a wriggling fish would leap from grasping hands and splash back on its way. Nearby in the forest the princess wandered, gathering lilies, primroses, full of joy, hearing her brother's yelps and hoots of pleasure. Why, the children had not known such peace for a long time. Fish came, and flowers, and they were delighted. A little way off at the edge of the forest, the witch, their stepmother, rolled out the magic ball of twine and hurried after it. And as she disappeared into the thick and the fast, the king arrived to visit his children and pulled out his ball of thread and threw it on the ground. Where it stayed, stubborn, stock still, he picked it up again, he cast it down, but nothing, it would not move. The king was at first dumbfounded, aggravated, and then slowly dawning, he felt that unease, that disquiet, which spread and grew and filled him with terror. He abandoned the useless thread and began to run into the heart of the forest. The three princes ran into the house full of victory, their net bulging with fish to cook for supper. Why, their father would be proud of them. They carried the heaving catch into the pantry, but sitting there, shrouded in black, skin like marble and eyes cold and gleaming, was the witch. "Now have you caught these fish yourselves?" she asked. All innocence, as her presence, as if her presence was the most natural thing in the world. "Why, how clever," she said. The boys moved together but took us back a step. "How did you find us?" they asked. "And where is our father?" The witch produced her most soothing voice, a voice of treacle. She moved towards them and explained that their father was on his way. Why didn't she cook the fish for them? Would they like to see the presents that she'd made? Special presents. And with this she produced the shirts and held them up with black sleeves fluttering like wings. I sewed each one by hand. Now aren't they nice? Try them on. And then your father can see them. Your fish, my shirts. We'll surprise him. Her voice sang, sing-song, it was treacly. The boys took the shirts and they shivered, and the witch barely watched as they changed from their tunics. Instead, their eyes were fixed on the window towards the forest. "And where? Where is your sister?" she sang. "Why, I miss her. I miss her." The princess was strolling in the forest. Her arms were brushing branches, calm, carefree. She heard the birds singing and the trees were sighing. She couldn't hear her father's anxious calls as he wandered lost, bewildered in the heart of the forest. In the cottage, her brothers tied the ribbons of their shirts and buttoned up to the necks, and the witch would turn to them with that bee-sting smile. She began to mutter an incantation, a low rhythmic verse over and over, faster and faster, louder and louder. This is what she said. The shirts will hurt, the wings will sting, the beaks will shriek, the eyes will cry. The shirts will hurt, the wings will sting, the beaks will shriek, the eyes will cry. The shirts will hurt, the wings will sting, the beaks will shriek, the eyes will cry. And as that curse grew louder, booming through the cottage, the terrible shirts tightened on the young boys, pulled and tightened like skin around them, shredding, squeezing, ripping into tatters. They looked at themselves in terror, fearful of that witch, her cruel voice winding around them and pulling. What was happening to them? Their shirts hurt and their arms felt like wings stinging them. Their eyes blinked back tears, and from their own mouths came shrieks. Awful, awful. Why, they were turning into birds. They were turning into ravens. The curse continued. Wilder. Wilder. Within a few seconds, there, rather than the boys, were three black ravens swirling in the room. Blind and panicked, and out they flew, out, out, away from the witch's triumphant screams. The princess saw them as she returned toward the cottage, her basket full with flowers. The ravens circled over her, shrieking, shrieking, terrified. She dropped her basket, ran towards the open door of the cottage, and then stopped dead in her tracks as she caught the witch at the window, staring, willing her in. But the princess turned, and she fled for her life. Losing as she did so both shoe and shawl, the witch pursued her. A black bat with arms outstretched, possessed. Ravens, ravens flying above her, shrieking. But at the very instant that his daughter disappeared into the forest's embrace, that king finally found his way out from his labyrinth. And there was the queen, his wife, the witch, hurtling from the house, wild in her triumph, the path strewn with flowers and discarded garments, feathers everywhere, anguished cries of father, father ringing in his ears. "What have you done?" he roared at the witch. "Me," she replied, pulling up and oozing with honey. "Why, I've done nothing." But the king would have none of it. His voice stern. "I ask you again, what have you done with my children?" The wife, all innocence, amazed. "Why are the children here?" As she spoke, her features melted into the features of that dead queen. The king covered his eyes. His hands tried not to look at her. But she willed him to. Willed him to, but he would not. "My boys," he cried, desperate. "Ah, my boys. Ah, ah." The three ravens circled above him. "My boys, my daughter, where are they? Why, I heard my daughter cry out to you." The witch's face relaxed and returned, a smile, though a curved sneer of ice, and she whispered and she cooed. "I think you must be unwell. Are you sickening for something? Why, let me see, let me soothe you." But the spell was broken over the king, and he pushed her roughly to the ground, and a hiss hissed from her lips. She looked up at him. Her cruelty was plain and unmasked. "Yes, you're upset," she hissed ominously. "I'll have to think about this, about what we can do with you." Then she picked up one of the lilies the princess had gathered, and she fixed upon it. The king stared astonished as the flower just drooped in her grip and wound itself around her fist like a spitting evil snake. And it was the last thing that he saw before the snake leapt onto his neck and bit its bitter caress. For a night and a day, the princess ran and stumbled, fled.
Fled until she dropped. Dropped into a dead sleep, and then she woke. And she saw three ravens before her. Now, perhaps she dreamt it because they spoke to her. "Sister," they seemed to say, "listen to us. We are your brothers. She did this to us and we are trapped. Help us, help us. You must keep silence. You must not speak to a single soul for 3 years. 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days. Only then can the spell be broken." Their sister listened. "Then I shall not speak," she promised solemnly. "Please," urged the ravens, "please keep your word. The shirts hurt, the wings sting, and the beak shriek. The eyes cry." And with that, the princess nodded, and she put her finger to her lips as a sign that she would not utter a single word to a single soul for 3 years, 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days until the wicked witch's spell was broken.
And so the princess made her home high in the hollow of an old dead tree, and was silent while weeks and weeks went by. Then one dead tree by the hollow of that dead tree, she watched the weeks and the weeks go by. But one day, passing the old tree, came a young prince far from home and wandering in the forest, and he stumbles across a stream, and he bends down into the flowing brook to quench his thirst. And as he cups his hands in the sparkling water, oh me, oh my, a delicate handkerchief of finest lace sweeps past him. The prince reaches and catches it, and he cranes his head upstream to seek its owner. He could see no one from where he was, and curious, he sets off following its sinuous course. Eventually, he came to a place where the stream widens into a small pond, and there, washing her clothes, was the princess. The prince called out to her, waving her handkerchief. At this, the princess was startled and confused, and hurried away into the thick of the forest. But the prince pursued her until he came to the tree into which she had disappeared. He thought she must be like a spirit or a fairy or enchanted. Her bright eyes flashed at him, but she would not reply as he questioned her. At length, settling on the ground beside her, he took out his food and he offered it to her. And as she was pretty famished, she had some. And soon he set off talking again of his past, of his present, and of his plans. And all the while he was thinking, my, my, what eyes. All the while he was thinking how he would like to kiss her mouth. So taken was he that he quite forgot what he was saying, and he blushed and he laughed and he blushed, and the princess, she smiled, her first smile in months. It was a smile that wrapped all the way around her heart and his heart and squeezed them tight together. And the handsome young prince came back every day for a week. And they practiced that smile until it was ready for him before he arrived. And soon he gave up speaking too, and then they were content just to sit and hug and live on that smile. Until one day he could not contain his thoughts, and he said them all. Love was the word that he said. And marriage, and always and ever. And the princess came out from her tree, and they kissed, and well, you know how it is. That was that. But the princess, though captivated, though thrilled, though tingling, she would not speak. Oh no, not a whisper. The prince set her up on his horse, and they rode the long ride to his kingdom, and on the way he told her of his father, the king, and of his beloved mother who had died. And that princess wanted to say, I know. She wanted to say, mine too. But she could not, and so she did not. And at length they were there at the gates of the palace, and proud as you please, the prince took the arm of his beloved and led her to meet his father and his new stepmother. And the king and queen were on the balcony when the young couple arrived. The prince embraced them and fetched his shy sweetheart from where she lingered close by, nervous, unsure. She could barely raise her eyes as she brought her to where they sat, smiling their greeting. Now the princess curtsied shyly, and then she looked up and saw the kindly old king with the white beard and the twinkling, and her eyes travelled to the queen, but there her heart stopped, her stomach dropped, her breath caught. For there before her, gold crown glinting, ermine and silk, smug, honey, bee-sting smile was the stepmother, the witch. The princess gasped, stumbled, fell to the ground, swooning. When she came to, she was in a room of blue and beauty, and the prince sat by her, holding her hand. Oh, she told herself she'd had a nightmare. She was dreaming. The king entered and smiled at her recovery. She'd been tired, he told her. Overwhelmed. How touching, he said. How charming. And yes, she was every bit as delightful as his son had told him. The princess fell back onto the feather pillows, relieved, relaxing for a second. Of course. Of course. It was just a nightmare. But at that very instant, the witch appeared, carrying a tray of broth and bread and remedies, her entrance a sharp chill. The princess could not speak, although her heart howled. Oh, but she could stare. No, she could not say, but she accused with her looks. Killer of my father, bewitcher of my brothers, she accused, for she knew her father must be dead. But for all her sneer and scowl, the witch was as shocked as the princess at their reunion. Here was a thorn come back to prick at her ambition, and the witch knew she must have done with her. Witch looked at princess. Princess looked at witch, and their purpose hardened. And so the battle began. The good princess versus the wicked witch. And all the while the princess kept faith with her promise and did not speak. And every day was a day nearer to the time when she could say all she knew. Everything. She kept an hourglass by her and watched the sand dribble the slow seconds. The witch, for her part, knew she must destroy the princess. And this became her one solitary murderous ambition. Oh yes, the days went by, and the princess married the prince, and it was true, the moon was honey for them. Never were a couple more suited, more in love. Their hearts blossomed and were full, and not a minute, it seemed, before a child was coming to bless them. All night the prince lay with his head on his wife's round belly, a hand in her hand, listening to the child growing and kicking and wriggling. The spring came, and there he was, a son, a boy, eyes like jewels, a sweet precious bundle, and the young mother would have given anything, everything to say his name and sing to him and whisper, but she couldn't, so she didn't. Even the witch seemed happy. She visited the young parents and their treasure and swept the baby in her arms and bill and coo. He has his mother's eyes, cooed the witch, lovely. Then she turned and smiled at her stepson. Let's hope he has your voice, my dear. Then returning the infant to its mother, she made to go, leaving the princess with an ominous farewell. Look after him, won't you? She said, all sweetness. Hug him up, the little man. And she did, of course she did. She hugged him all up. That night she lay with him in her arms, that warm, perfect parcel. And the next morning the princess woke with her son still tight in her embrace, the shawl wrapped around him, covering her head. She gently pulled it back to kiss his tiny cheek. But what she found instead was the cold white china of a doll's face, its lips grotesquely red, its painted black eyes staring at her. The princess opened her mouth to scream and then bit back the noise and let out gasps, long, silent howls, racking her poor body. Desperate she was, and she pulled on the bell rope by the bed, its violent clangs clinging her anguish. The prince came running to her, bursting into the room. What is this? He saw the doll, unravelling from the shawl, the hollow, fixed smile. Oh, yes. Where is the baby? He asked, his heart thumping. Where is the baby? Where is he? Where, oh, where is our son? But the princess didn't know, and she couldn't speak, and their baby was nowhere to be found. The palace was scoured from top to bottom, day and night. The grounds were searched, the forests were combed. Nothing, no sign of the tiny child. Oh, the pain of it, the pain, intolerable. The princess could not be comforted.
was inconsolable, simply sobbing silently and covered her head with the sheets, until one night she slipped from her bed and went into the garden and dug with her hands in the ground a small hole, and bending into the earth she screamed with all her heart, screamed and screamed her pain into the hole until morning, and was better. And looking up into the sky she saw her brothers the ravens circling above her. The days pass, they seem to say, and then. While she was in the garden, the witch found the prince sitting at a window, lost in his sorrow, and she comforted him and massaged his shoulder. "Your father and I are so sad for you," she sighed, kissing his head. The prince nodded sadly. The witch continued to rub his shoulders, that bee-sting smile ugly but unseen to the prince. "Darling," she began, but then hesitated. "Yes," said the prince, but the witch seemed reluctant to continue. "What?" he insisted. "Please say what it is." The witch shrugged and then went on. "You don't think..." "No, this is absurd. It couldn't be." "You don't think the princess didn't..."
"What?"
"The little baby, perhaps, and perhaps..." "No, impossible." The prince was overcome with indignation. "She loved him," he cried, wounded. "Of course she did, stupid. Oh, forget I said anything, please." At that moment the princess returned, her cloak pulled about her, the hood covering her wretchedness. The prince went to her, drawing her to him and clutching her hands. "Dearest," he whispered as the witch looked on, "where have you been? I've looked everywhere." And then he noticed her hands smudged with soil and he frowned. "What have you got on your hands?" he asked. "What's this? Is it earth?" The princess said nothing, torn apart by her vow, bradling at the witch's smirk. "Perhaps she's been digging a little hole," suggested the witch. "No? Then what have you been digging?" she asked, raising an eyebrow at the confused prince. But the princess would not reply, though she had much to say. The witch shared a quizzical look with the prince, making of the silence a terrible confession. "It must pain you so much she is dumb," said the queen carefully. 2 years, 2 months after the princess had taken her vow of silence, another boy was born to her, and she would not let this precious son from her sight. Not for an instant. Night after night, while all slept, she watched over him and would not sleep until one morning exhaustion overcame her and her eyes stopped fighting and closed and the princess sank into a fitful dream. But when she woke, she feared the child stolen and clutched the tiny bundle to her and felt its arm wriggling. Relieved, she bent down to kiss its sweet cheek, her own eyes barely open. And suddenly a shrill shriek sounded, and staring, incredulous, horrified, the princess saw that in the place of her son, a piglet, pink eyes glazing with fear, struggled from the shawl which bound it. Again the silent screams, the gasps, the frenzy, the despair, for neither could this second son be found. And now there were whispers whispering in the corridors of the palace. Two babies disappeared. "What kind of a mother?" the whispers asked. "Who loses babies? Who will not speak?" "Cursed," they said. "Bewitched." It was several weeks later that the prince, confused and miserable, went to see his stepmother high in her tower. As he entered her room, she slammed shut a huge book covered in strange signs and inscriptions. Dust flew from it, but she smiled at him and unclipped her hair, which fell grey and white to her shoulders. Cats ran under her table, and other creatures the prince could not have named had he seen them, but he didn't. A pot steamed on the fire and gave off a sweet smell like incense, which made the prince's eyes, still stinging from his tears, weep all over again. He said nothing, but he went to her, and they embraced, his tears, her soothing and syrup. The prince stared ahead, and he braced himself to confide his worst fears. "You know before, when my first son," he mumbled. "You know you asked, and I said, it was impossible. But now I don't know, and I'm frightened." The witch nodded again, holding him close, nodding and murmuring. Now she is with child again. I could not bear, the prince continued, and then trailed away with tears consuming him. The witch sighed her support. Shh, she whispered. I know. When the time comes, we must watch closely. We must love her very much, but watch her closely. Don't worry, I'm here. Shh. And she mothered him, wrapping him inside her web. The time come. Came even. Did I say come? The time came. And the princess gave birth to a third son. This one, more exquisite still, delicate and perfect. The prince was with her, and together they were torn between joy and terror as they gazed on their little miracle. In the palace, in the kingdom, celebrations this time were muted. Nobody dared risk the raised glass, the toast, the clap on the back. The whole world seemed to hold its very breath. The prince suggested to his wife that he should take his son away, somewhere secret at least for a while. This echo of her father's solution and its fatal results served only to unsettle the princess more, and she could not keep her hands from trembling. She shook her head, violently rejecting the prince's suggestion. She lying on her bed, the baby in her arms, and the prince sitting beside her. At her refusal, the prince stood up and walked to the door, and the princess could just see the shadowy presence of the witch standing in the doorway, could just pick out a few of the words that passed between the husband and the malevolent stepmother. I told you she wouldn't agree to it, she heard the prince say. Of course, smiled the witch. Well then, stay beside her until the morning and watch close. Then the witch walked confidently into the bedchamber and leant over the bed. Little lamb, she addressed the baby. Don't you worry. Your father will watch over you. And she picked up the baby to hold, and the princess snatched him away and clutched him for dear life. Ha ha, sighed the witch, frowning at the prince. Never mind. She left them there in the failing light, and the flame from the torch was dancing and guttering down the long passages to her tower. And so that young couple sat silent with their hearts full to bursting, each feeling alone and frightened, watching their tiny child, his fingers like stars. Both mother prayed and father prayed and crouched like sentries over the cradle. I will not sleep, they said to themselves. I will never close my eyes until this child is safe. And for hours they sat in grim resolve, lighting candle after candle and reciting their prayers, heads reeling, but the strain and the tiredness of the birth washed over them, huge waves washing over them, the past lulling them to sleep. And for a minute or 2 minutes or three, they slept. And the prince woke. At his side lay his wife with eyes closed. Her hair was grey, her face was grey, and in her arms the shawl had unravelled. The prince began to scream an inhuman wail, which shocked the princess awake. As she started sitting bolt upright, the shawl fell away from her, and ashes floating up from it, ashes everywhere filling the room. What have you done? Cried the husband in a voice which snapped from suspicion to hatred, his rage welling up in huge sobs. What have you done to my children? She could not answer him. Had she wanted, had she wished to break her promise, for her own voice was lost in her private nightmare. Tears just ran through the grey dust on her face, and the prince, wild, tormented, railed at her for the murder of his sons. The king charged in, the witch at his heels, and there they all were, surrounding that paralysed princess, aghast at the scene. The witch swept up the shawl and let the ashes slide from it. Oh dear, she whispered in a voice heavy with shock. The prince, maddened, spat out the accusation. She's a witch! You are right all along, she's a witch! He covered his face with his hands. My poor babies, came his despairing cry. My poor sons. The stepmother, the real witch, nodded and sighed and spoke into her husband's ear. The king listened, choking his own hot rage. Yes, he agreed, yes, burn her as a witch. And the witch, hardly able to suppress her triumph, glowing with it, added but a single word, tomorrow. And so it was decreed that 3 years, 3 months, 3 weeks and 3 days after she had taken her vow of silence, the poor innocent princess would be burnt at the stake as a witch. As they prepared the bonfire, she stared from her window at the sundial in the courtyard still far from midday. And she hardly cared, with all that was lost, her father, her mother, her brothers, her babies, the love of her husband. She hardly cared for her own poor body. She was glad to be silent. She had nothing more to say to the cruel world. And at last they came for her, and they took her to the place, and they tied her to the stake, and the sundial neared its line of 12, and it was the witch herself who lit the torch and carried it towards the bundles of hay and twigs, the flame aloft, triumphant. All faces to all men, a mother to the prince, a wife to the king, queen to the baying crowd, but a witch to the girl who stood bound and brave and keeping her vow. They stared at each other, a conversation without words, evil the victor, preparing to take her toll, relishing the pause as the hot flame neared its destiny, impatient to fall into the twigs, the hay and burn. But then, three ravens flew above, wheeling and diving and crashing into the witch, pecking at her eyes and screeching the while. The wings sting, the shirts hurt, the beaks shriek, the eyes cry. And she dropped the torch on herself and screamed as its fire enveloped her. And in a second she was nothing but ashes, dust, fragments. A silence fell on the crowd as they looked on aghast, as the raven circled, a silence so profound that nothing could be heard but the flapping of their wings in the sharp sunlight, until a strange and sudden sound shocked the crowd from their trance. A voice was crying out in release, a voice locked in, volcanic, suddenly erupting in the air. My brothers, my brothers, my brothers! It was the princess, free at last to speak and tell all. My brothers, my brothers, she cried, and with that the three ravens fell from the sky, their wings dropping and their feathers falling, and by the time they landed, they were birds no longer, and there before the loyal sister princess were her three brothers. They ran to her, they pulled her from the bonfire, and they hugged and they kissed her, and now she could not speak for crying. And the prince, her husband, came to her and wept with her. But he understood nothing, nothing until the brothers pulled him, both to a place nearby where the other three brothers played. A boy, a toddler, a tiny infant. For of course it was the witch who had stolen the children away. She had cast them, newborn, down a deep, dark well. But the ravens who watched everything had caught them up and cared for them and kept them safe for this very moment when they might be reunited with their parents. And oh, for every tear they had wept before, the prince and princess now shed 1,000, clutching their children, whom they had supposed lost, hearts full to breaking. And they fell to their knees and praised heaven, for all was restored, and good held sway. The girl who had kept faith and had but one face for everybody was rewarded with sons and brothers, a sweetheart and a crown. And she practised her smile until it was perfect. Ah, now, those of you who should know more might question what has gone before. 3 minutes was the sand unused when Princess shouted what she knew. And well, for these grains of unspent time, her youngest brother's wing remained. He didn't mind, and nor do I. So you, my dear listener, should not complain. The end. A long story, and to tell you the truth, I started the story in August and I finished it in September. Life's been rather chaotic and there's a holiday in Italy and Oh, just the normal sort of madness of going back to work in September and trying to sort things out and just general. Remember, please, dear listener, if you have time to do me a review on iTunes, it helps boost me up the rankings. And I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Do please, if you have, pass the word around and help me get a few more subscribers along the way, because your company is always welcome. God bless. Good night.